SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough! Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back at the races and still kind of absorbing all the fallout from the news this morning that PASPA is ruled unconstitutional. And as a result, and for those that aren't sure, the Professional and Amateur Sports Protection Act is what PASPA stood for. And here's a quote from Dennis. This is the culmination of the hard work and dedication of a large group of individuals, all of whom contribute to today's victory and will undoubtedly contribute to our future success. Dennis Drazen, Chairman and CEO of Darby Development, the operators of Monmouth Park. We started this fight back in 2012, and I put a link. It's funny, I put a link up on my Derby Trail website. There's been an ongoing thread at Derby Trail since 2013 that I kept adding to with every layer of news and with every advance and then every setback. We started this fight back in 2012 and are grateful that the Supreme Court has recognized that we've been right all along. We can now shift our focus on commencing sports betting, which will be off and running at Monmouth Park as soon as possible, and that is supposed to be within a couple of weeks. And Dennis will do it tomorrow on air, but Ray Lesniak, who had been a state senator in New Jersey, and Lesniak has been at Dennis's side and been absolutely through all the travails, has been supportive as can be in the legislature and then out front. And we'll let Dennis. Then you cannot, honest to God, Dennis Drazen, and I asked him this, you know, when it was becoming apparent. He's an attorney by trade. I mean, that's his business. That's his, you know, his career. For him to, I mean, to have made this possible and to have insisted the way he has for, you know, 6+ years that the commandeering, you know, that was, he cut to the absolute core of this and would not be deterred. And as an attorney, as someone in the profession, he, you know, he's done something that you can't imagine what it must feel like as a lawyer to have, you know, been responsible for this, I mean, just landmark moment. So congratulations to Dennis. John White is joining us, and we congratulated John last week off the Derby play in the Express Bet Derby wagering guide. And I'm sure, I hope John was listening earlier when Johnny and I were talking about the Preakness guide and a Preakness approach. John, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Dennis Drazen with maybe as much tenacity as I've seen exhibited since watching like John Henry race. I just have such admiration for what he's accomplished here. And, you know, I have felt throughout my entire life how absurd it is been in this country that you sit there, you could go to the racetrack and wager, and then the lotteries came in. You could go bet the lottery at the 7-Eleven or at the grocery store or what have you, and then these Indian casinos came in and so forth. And yet if you wanted to bet the Packers playing the Bears, I mean, you either had to bet with an illegal bookie or go to Las Vegas or bet offshore. Now, Johnny D raised a very excellent point, and that is the fact that with illegal bookies, the credit aspect is certainly something that will keep them rolling along. On the other hand, the offshore entities don't have that credit, and they're going to take a pretty good punch to the gut if the United States can get up and rolling here with legalized sports betting that it is safe and secure and taxed. I think most sports bettors would be more than happy to, they're not looking for something prohibitive. And, of course, the real serious players, they're going to look for every nickel and dime. It's like the serious horse players are so attuned to breakage and so forth. But by the same token, for those that just want to play it on a fun basis, and you think of the NCAA pools and the fantasy sports and so forth. And yet, if you wanted to bet the 49ers playing the Rams, you're out of luck, pal. And yet the state would say, "Don't, you can't do that, but by God, play your lottery today." I mean, it's just so absurd. So, I think this is a step to reality. And what's going to be interesting is, as you and Johnny D were discussing, how this is going to unfold. And it's going to be a state-by-state situation. But here again, New Jersey way ahead of the curve, because they're the ones that brought this on. And they deserve to kind of break out of the gate first in this regard. So, but like California, I don't know what's going to happen here. I understand there is some legislation that's being considered. It's not been introduced, but it's in the consideration pile. But the Indian lobby here is so strong, which is what kept slots from ever coming into the racetracks, which I don't think is a real negative for California. Because as Johnny D pointed out, once you kind of have that marriage with the slots, that's such a key part of your financial bottom line. And then if all of a sudden they say, you're not going to get that anymore. I mean, that's a scary situation. So California's been able to stand on its own two legs in the racing world, which is important. But if somehow the Indian lobby, with all its power, can be fended off to the extent that you could have it to where you could go to Del Mar or Santa Anita or what have you and bet on sports, I think it would be, I don't think it would be a negative. And if anything, I think it would be a positive for racing, if racing were to get a cut of that action or what have you. So it's just going to be interesting to see, as you guys were saying, how it's going to all unfurl here. But it's a huge deal. There's no question about it. And I love it, Steve, when you sit there and just blast the NCAA. I love it because, boy, they deserve it.
Yeah, they're terrible. They're terrible people.
Hypocritical. And to be honest, the NFL, too. I mean, the NFL for years, the only reason that they put the injury reports forever, in the papers and everything and made them public was because it was known that you better do that because so much money is being bet on pro football games that it just wasn't in the interest of the NFL if they were hiding in for injury information. So that's what led to that. And the NFL's known this forever. I mean, television and wagering is what made the NFL the juggernaut that it became. I mean, that's that simple.
No doubt.
I mean, it's television and betting, period.
John, speaking of juggernauts, we've got potentially one in Justify, and I do want to cover the weekend action at Santa Anita. But before, let's do this. Before Doug O'Neill joins, Doug's going to join us at the bottom of the hour. We missed him earlier, but some thoughts on Preakness from you first, and then we'll come back after Doug to the Santa Anita weekend, including 2 days of carryovers that resulted yesterday in a very nice payday for a handful of pick six players that came back on Sunday after Saturday carried and set up the potential for a big pool. You wrote about Baffert coming back and the record that he's authored with his Derby winners in Preakness.
Well, he's, as most people by now know, he's 4-for-4 with his Derby winners. But, I'm also impressed with how well he's done with some of his horses that didn't win the Kentucky Derby, even like the Point Givens and the Looking at Luckies. In other words, Baffert is so adept at this two-week turnaround. I mean, he's the master at it. So, and I'll tell you what, I respect Good Magic a lot. I do. I mean, I thought he ran one terrific race in the Kentucky Derby, but I just kind of get that shamish feeling, if you know what I mean. The margin was the same as Secretariat and Sham and the Kentucky Derby, 2.5 lengths, and I just find it very hard to envision Good Magic turning the tables here. I mean, it's not impossible, that's for sure, but boy, I would be so surprised. And I think the biggest threat to justify at this point is, at what point does the cumulative effect of all this that has been kind of crammed into his racing schedule, you know, we marvel at what he's done. You know, the 76 days from his maiden win to winning the Kentucky Derby is something that's going to be looked upon as an epic accomplishment for good reason. But at what point does it finally take a toll? Does it ever? I mean, I don't know. This guy is so talented, and he's got so many weapons. I mean, and this is why people were kind of on this bandwagon before he ever raced, and even in some of these workouts. I mean, here's a colt that was able to outwork Dr. Dorr, an older horse, who Dr. Dorr, I mean, is an up-and-rising older male here in Southern California that's going to be a major player in the Gold Cup coming up. I mean, this reminds me of how, when I asked Jack Wilson, the longtime chart caller for the Racing Form, regarded as one of the all-time greats, we were at dinner one night, and I thought I knew the answer to this question, because he called Secretariat's Belmont Stakes chart, and I figured, you know, it's almost stupid to ask this question, but I'll ask it. I said, who's the best horse you ever saw? And he said, there's no doubt about it. When he said that, I thought for sure he was going to say Secretariat. He says Citation. I said, wow. I said, I thought for sure you'd say Secretariat. He said, no. He says, the reason I would say Citation over Secretariat is because Citation, and early in his three-year-old year in Florida, drilled the reigning horse of the year. He says, when do you see a three-year-old drilling the reigning horse of the year early in the year when they're three? I mean, and that's one of those things when somebody tells you something, it just stays with you forever. So, I mean, the fact that, I mean, Justify hasn't beaten older horses in a race early in the year, but again, to be doing what he's done, even in workouts with Opportunity and Dr. Dorr, is impressive to me. So, but he doesn't have to have the lead. He doesn't have to have a fast track. I mean, and this alleviates the Riva Ridge concern, because if not for the wet track at Pimlico, I think Meadow Stable, Lucian Lorne, and Ron Turcotte would have had back-to-back triple crowns. But BBB relished that wet track, and Riva Ridge detested it and ended up a well-beaten fourth as a prohibitive favorite. And so no triple crown there. But Justify, as Bob Baffert has said, we don't have to worry about the rain with him. And that's taken out of the equation, because he's already now proven on two wet tracks. I mean, the distance isn't a problem. He's actually backing up in distance. The pace should be obviously nothing like it was in the Kentucky Derby this time. So that's a plus for him. I mean, everywhere you really look. So as I say, I think that if there's one worry to me, there's two worries. The one worry is that, again, the cumulative effect. But the second one is, one thing you learn in sports or horse racing, if somebody looks like they can't lose, that's just about the time they, you know, if they just look too good. And we're getting to that point with Justify now, to where he just looks that invincible, and that's when I start to get kind of scared, because they still have to go out and run the race, and he, you know, they don't just hand it to you. And I do respect Good Magic enough, but like I say, it's not impossible for him to turn the tables. But, I just don't see anybody here. You know, I think there's a chance. I mean, I don't think it's crazy I think it's possible that Bob Baffert may even have the second best three-year-old in his own barn in McKenzie. I mean, remember, McKenzie was number one on a lot of lists when he went to the sidelines. And I heard Bob Baffert say just in the last week or so that before Justify ran his first race, he was thinking triple crown for McKenzie. Now, that's a big statement from Bob. Believe me, he does not think, I mean, he wasn't just thinking Derby. He was thinking possible triple crown winner with McKenzie. That's how high he was on McKenzie. And for McKenzie to go to the sidelines and pretty much almost at the same time that that door closed, the door opened with Justify. And now not only is a Kentucky Derby winner, but is poised to take this real serious run at a Triple Crown is really remarkable. And that's why I say I wouldn't put it past the possibility that Baffert has not only the best three-year-old male in his barn, but maybe the second best, certainly one of the other best in the country. So I think we're in for something very special here, it appears.
John, let me pause for you, and I've also got some answers on the question you asked about the various California, for instance, where there is legislation on the move, and quite a few other states, and to the benefit of racing and in a lot of venues, including West Virginia and in Indiana and New York probably as well. New York may even extend to the OTBs. I'm going to send a link. Sportshandle.com has got a very helpful tracking device for where sports gaming legislation sits in every state. We're going to pause with John for a minute to talk a little bit to Doug O'Neill. And we owe Doug a visit, not even having to wait for the win that came at Belmont on Saturday. Of course, he had Blended Citizen, who absolutely proved that he's not a turf or synthetic horse at all, because he won the Grade 3 Peter Pan. But in addition to this, don't think, Doug, that we're not going to go back to last weekend and talk about the Singletary win, blame the rider, and At the Races listeners, they got chapter and verse about blame the rider way back when. Congratulations on everything.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, it was a pretty fun last few weeks, that's for sure.
Well, there's a few things to talk about. Blended Citizen, obviously, is front and center. And you were knocking on the door, and you wanted to run in the Derby with Blended Citizen, and couldn't get in. Nobody fell out the last 10 days, and you opted for this, and now you seem on track for a Belmont try. Talk about his development and what a satisfying win this is. Kyle Fry, too, big win for him back in New York.
Big time, big time. Well, it all started off with Brooke Hubbard and my brother Dennis liked him at the sale, and when he came in, he was a big, good-looking dude, and just took him kind of a while to mentally develop. And, like you said, we were trying to repeat his half-brother looking at Lee it did in last year in the Derby, but we weren't fortunate enough to get in. But got to thank Steve Hall or Steve Young and Greg Hall, the owners of him. They're the ones who kind of were thinking about the Peter Pan when we didn't get in, and sure turned out to be a great decision, and he came out of in good shape, and now we're hoping to stay put right there and shoot for the big Belmont.
What challenges are posed when you're pointing for one particular assignment and you're looking at making a two-turn 10 furlong try, then a week later you're going a one-turn mile and an eighth, and there's strategy involved, obviously, but there's also there's also the horse. What were some of the thoughts going in?
Well, it is. You get them kind of to where you think you got them peaked and, ready to go, and then they don't get in. You're worried, uh-oh, I might have tipped him over the edge a little bit, and am I going to have him ready, coming off a plane and another race and another state and all that jazz. And that's where Jack Sitterson, our main guy, who's going on his own. It's going to be a sad moment for us, but great moment for him. But Jack just did a great job of keeping him on edge and ready, and we were all curious what a mile and eighth, one turn, how that would unfold. And Kyle, we had talked going into it was the first time Kyle had ever ridden the Belmont surface, the track, so there was a lot of question marks, but and Kyle rode a great race. Him and splendid citizen are just in complete sync right now. And he ran the way we had always dreamt of, the way we've seen him train in the mornings. But we still, until he hit the wire, it was an unbelievable feeling and something that we dreamt about but didn't really expect.
You and I talked about him coming out of the Jeff Ruby and the mechanics of getting him on the turf. He breaks his maiden going a mile at Del Mar, comes back in the Eddie Logan, and then the circumstances that brought you up to the El Camino and the Jeff Ruby, and he had started his career on the dirt. What is the difference in your mind, Doug? And obviously you went through the California synthetic era. You know the ins and outs of this, moving horses from different surfaces. But what would be the difference between the horse starting his career as a two-year-old on dirt and being sort of uncompetitive, honestly, and where he is now to be able to, win a race like the Peter Pan in, May of his 3-year-old year?
Yeah, it's a great question, Steve. And I think, the babies that are real precocious and real speed-minded, do really well in those initial dirt races because it is kind of a, they're running from gate to wire. And where the turf races, are much more, the pace is softer and everything's kind of unfolding. And a horse like him, who is so big physically but so immature mentally, that kind of setting suited him better, whether it was synthetic or turf. And, now as he's matured and he's catching up to his body, I think these dirt races where even though the pace is a little quicker, he's ready for that. And there was a split second there where I thought Kyle had him too close the other day, but he had him right where he needed to be, and that's just a credit to Kyle and the result of a talented colt that's finally maturing mentally and is doing what we're asking of him. The future's bright. He stays injury free. There's no good. I know on numbers he's still a few ticks below the real
right.
good ones. I think he's coming. I think there's still a lot of improvement left in him.
Well, you now have got a month. How do you plan, or what's the execution elements? You have him in New York. Obviously, it's best to just keep him there, no?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the plan will be to keep him there, and he'll probably have a couple freezes between now and the Belmont. And, what we learned from the I'll Have Another time was, we're not going to do any open gallops on the main track if we can help it. So, probably train him a little bit lighter and maybe use the train track there a little bit more. And, he's such a fit horse that he probably doesn't even need that much, but we'll listen to him, and if he's full of energy, we'll let him do a little bit more. If he's feeling just fine, we'll just go nice and easy on him, but kind of play it by ear and super excited. But yeah, it makes all the sense in the world to keep him right there. We've Ralph Nix, who's a good friend of ours and a great horseman. He's letting us take advantage of his crew and his setup. And so he's got a little home there, and we've got Danny, his groom, Robles, who's a phenomenal groom, will stay with them, and then Leandro Mora and I will be sneaking in there from time to time, but we're excited, and just got to keep him injury-free.
Well, you said about the figs, it is notable that he breaks 90 on the buyer scale. He is just ratcheted with every start. He's one of these horses. You talk about the mental aspect. That's his 10th career start. So it'll be career start 11 in the Belmont. And he's just shown very steady, very incremental each start. So he'll end up being a price, you would think, in the Belmont. But having a win over the surface doesn't hurt. It's been a while since we had the Peter Pan, the Peter Pan Avenue, one of the traditional preps for the Belmont. I do want to hit a couple of other spots. You did compete in the Barrera as well, and a horse that we also talked about, King Cause. Some thoughts coming out of the Barrera.
Yeah, we were bringing him back a little quick, but it was in our own backyard, and he actually bumped up his fire a little bit as we, it was definitely not an easy spot by any means, but I think a little bit of breather between that start and his next one, we're eager to get him going two turns, and like Planet Citizen, he was a big, good-looking 2-year-old for us last year at Del Mar, and he just mentally wasn't ready to do what his body was, and his pedigree, what we were hoping to see. But he's really come around a lot, and looking forward to getting him going a little distance. Not sure where that'll be, but hopefully something in a month or 6 weeks, we'll find something going two turns for him.
Excellent. Talk about Blame the Riders win last week in the Singletary. Broke his maiden. It took a while. You and I talked about him when we're trying to even put him in stakes company when he ran in the Lewis, and you always felt that this was going to be a horse that would connect the dots. And of course, some people might have gotten on board. We celebrated for the listeners who got him at 10-1 in the maiden win. Comes right back in his first start after breaking the maiden, and he wins at 15-1, $32 winner for Blame the Rider last week.
That was incredible. And that's a credit to Mario Gutierrez, who's he's worked him a ton of times, and we all got talking, and he's just kept disappointing us start after start, and we've noticed in the mornings when you put him up on the front end, he's a different horse than if he's chasing. So Mario did a great job of just, his maiden win, he went wire to wire, and then in that win the other day, he couldn't make the lead, but he was right up in there, and he just doesn't want to make up a lot of ground at this point in his career. But now that we know that, we'll Mario will continue to send him pretty hard leaving there to make sure he's up in the mix, and man, his competitive juices really get flowing when he's ridden like that, and hopefully we keep it going.
Well, I have every confidence. A number of listeners last week jumped aboard and were keeping tabs after we talked about Blame the Rider and the origins of the name, which was fun. Let me hit you up about Thursday coming up, and Quasant, who we've been tracking, the Square Eddie colt, comes back in the opener down the hill for Calbreds, and I've also got what looks like a maiden settle it in the third on Thursday we want to know about.
Yeah, both are doing well. They're both Team Redham, and both are Square Eddies, so we've got a lot of similarities in these guys, and Croissant, I believe, broke his maiden coming down the hill, and like a lot of the Square Eddies, they just seem to love that layout. So I haven't really studied the competition, but when they made that race final that it was going to go, I was real excited. He's doing well, and I think Calbreth coming down the hill hits him right between the ears, so he should be tough. And then with Settle It, she's a nice 2-year-old filly, has a lot of gas. We're adding blinkers on her in her debut. She kind of left there not as quick as what we had saw in the morning, so I think the blinkers will add a little speed to her leaving there. And, she ran against the boys, too, first time out. We're in with the fillies this time, so never know what the first-time star is, what might show up in there, but we're optimistic that Settle It will move forward off her debut, which should make her tough. And hopefully we can get a two-bagger for Paul and Zilla Redham on Thursday.
And I'm just looking at her. You trained that dam, I think. Meet Me in the Woods.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. She was a nice filly. We had a bunch of just little nagging issues with her. She would have had a real big time career. I think she broke her maiden by like 7 at Hollywood Park and general meeting filly and loathed the talent, but just from shins to bleeding to this to that, and her career was just unfortunately cut short. But she turned out to be a great mama and she's her offspring. You can see the talent that her mom had.
Well, and because she won at First Asking, and then was a you put her in stakes company whenever you had the chance. It's actually not that long ago, right? I mean, she's a young mare.
Yeah, I want to say, gosh, she's probably only 8 or 9, maybe. Yeah, she's cool. not that old. So she ran right towards the end of Hollywood Park, to the best of my recollection.
And, oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Which is getting smaller and smaller in the rearview mirror, actually. It's hard to believe.
You and I are just getting a little bit older, maybe. We're getting better, though. We're all getting better.
are we going to see you? We going to see you at Timonium or Dennis?
Dennis the Menace. You're going to see him there. He's all excited. It's like a baseball scout going out to the high school and college games. I guess he's pumped to see the future, and hopefully. He sees a couple good prospects that he can get some clients to buy, and we'll get to enjoy the fruits of them down the road here. So, but yeah, you'll definitely see Dennis there.
Well, we'll be there tomorrow. You got 3 days of Breeze shows at Timonium, and then next week 2 days of sale, and the last big opportunity on the East Coast to buy 2-year-olds in training. Should be good too. I was going through the catalog a little bit last night. Doug, well done. We won't see you this week, but are you running anything over the weekend? Actually,
yeah, we
in
should.
Baltimore.
Baltimore. No, nothing at Baltimore, unfortunately.
Okay.
No, we'll be glued to the TV though, watching the Preakness. This is a great week with the sales and the Preakness, and there's no better place to be this week than Baltimore, Maryland. So I'm jealous. I'm not going to be there, but have some crab cakes and a pop for me, Steve.
We'll do it, and we will see you at Belmont, and we'll get Doug over to King Umberto for a little.
I love it.
All right.
Take care. Thanks for having me.
Dougie, thanks. Doug O'Neill, everybody, and you can follow Doug on Twitter, Doug O'Neill 1. We'll stay right here. We've got 10 minutes to fill out, and we'll do that with more with John White, who's standing by. And before I forget, one of the winners over the weekend, out of yesterday, the story with Pink Lloyd up in Canada won again, and I think now up to 10 or 11 straight wins for their horse of the year last year, the 6-year-old gelding, and the new Providence. I mean, this was a slam dunk, but still, he's kind of fun to keep an eye on. Get back with John White to talk about the weekend at Santa Anita. And John, I took a swing at the pick six on Saturday. I couldn't do it yesterday because I was making my way down here, but Saturday, let's talk about Kanthaka's win. That was the second leg of the pick six. It felt like Kanthaka and Mikhail were the key players. Later on, you had a big upset. Baffert with his other horse, and that was Emboldened at a big price, got a very good ride from Martin Garcia. There were plenty of other difficult horses as people went after a carryover Saturday, but it produced a big carryover on Sunday.
Well, one other thing about the weekend that I thought that I did want to mention, and especially since you just had Doug O'Neill won, Blended Citizen winning the Grade 3 Peter Pan at Belmont with Core Belief second. One of the themes that we've seen in this crop is that when the Southern California-based shippers have shipped out, yep, and this goes back to even last fall, they have done quite well. And I think this, again, was another clue to justify in the Kentucky Derby, and I think it's another clue to justify going forward into the Preakness. I mean, even Core Beliefs, I thought he actually ran a decent third in the Santa Anita Derby. I mean, a decent third, I say that. He was 9.5 lengths behind Justify. But here's a horse who's 9.5 lengths behind Justify, and he sent off as the favorite in the Peter Pan, stumbled at the start, and finishes second to another Southern California-based horse, Blended Citizen. So, and that was a big win for Blended Citizen, I thought, from the standpoint that, yes, he had won the race at Turfway on the synthetic, and yes, he's run well on the turf, he's won on the turf, but I wasn't quite sure maybe how good he was on the dirt. And to get this Peter Pan win under his belt on the dirt at Belmont, I think that certainly has impressed me that, you know, any horse that can show that kind of versatility to win on that many different types of surfaces and to ship and so forth, and he's an improving type colt and kind of interesting. So, but Kanthaka, I loved Michael Rona when he said Kentucky, he's the king of the 7 furlong shoot because he is now 3 for 3 going 7 furlongs at Santa Anita. He ran that huge race when he won the San Vicente earlier this year. And cutting back out of the bluegrass, cutting back from 1 1/8 to 7 furlongs, I thought that was also a beautiful ride by Pratt. You know, sometimes Pratt can put up just some absolute gems, and I thought this was one of them. Just beautiful, beautiful ride there. And speaking of beautiful, I thought beautiful shot for Keith DeSormo and Calumet Farm. Acquitted himself quite well in this race coming out of the Arkansas Derby. You know, kind of, you know, finding softer company and cutting back in distance, and really ran quite a big race, a career best buyer for him. So that was a big step in the right direction.
I'm glad you mentioned Beautiful Shot, because Beautiful Shot was part of a burst of Calumet success. It obviously runs a big race there, but on either end, there was also Alsatian winning for Neil Drysdale, winning the fourth at Santa Anita, and there was, of course, Patch winning the allowance at Belmont. So, boy, Brad Kelly and what is going on with Calumet, and, of course, the Funny Duck win, second year in a row, Pat Day Mile. It's I know people would prefer to see the red jacket, the Devil's Red, and with the blue sleeves, but we're to be very. It's just nice to see what's happening at Calumet and Brad Kelly picking up where Kwiatkowski left off and making Calumet prominent at all levels of the game again.
Well, I'm pretty sure there's a lady in Texas that's become something of a Calumet Farm thanks to Funny Duck and the nice score she had in the Pick 5 on Kentucky Derby Day with an $18 ticket. So, and then you talked about Embolden. And this is a big one. Now, while Baffert, his two runners were something of a disappointment, I thought, in the Laz Barrera, Mikhail and Zulkifar, you know, those were two strong contenders going in and finished third and fourth, respectively, Zulkifar third. But Baffert pulls off the big upset with Embolden, and it's a big win for the Baffert barn from the standpoint it's like when Arrogate won for Baffert. I consider that to be huge because from the client standpoint, it's important for trainers like the Bafferts and the Chad Browns and the Pletchers, because they're all competing for these horses on a national scale. I mean, that's one thing Baffert has alluded to with Justify. He's saying, I'm sure glad they sent him to me and not Pletcher or somebody else. I mean, that's, you know, to say the least. And this is a win for Godolphin for Baffert. And so this is, you know, big for that Baffert barn. It was big when he won for Judmont with Arrogate and had the success that he had with Arrogate. And it's big to me if he can get success, you know, with a Godolphin runner to where he can get Godolphin, you know, more Godolphin horses, because they've got the wherewithal to give you the type of horses that Baffert wants to have to be a factor, you know, in the big, big races. So from that standpoint, I thought it was big. And then the way she finished, I mean, my goodness. I mean, it was an 84 buyer, so it's not going to knock your socks off or anything. But, you know, she beat a multiple grade one winner, Moonshine Memories, who was coming off the layoff. I thought it was a good comeback race for Moonshine Memories, and she'll be able to move forward off of that. And but that Embolden, that was quite a nice win for her. Dream Tree has disappeared. I mean, we know she got hurt and everything, but I have not even seen an update on her or anything. And, you know, she was one of the ones, along with Midnight Bazoo here in Southern California. She defeated Midnight Bazoo by a nose twice when early in their careers. And Dream Tree, a grade one winner. But like I say, I haven't even seen an update on Dream Tree, which is kind of sad. But, well, Embolden certainly is a nice filly moving forward for that Baffert barn.
Well, and they're looking, in fact, both Hollendorfer and Baffert, both thinking of coming east for sprint assignments for Emboldened and for Kent Thacka. Yeah, there was also, I also wanted to mention, you know, the horse that, that tripped the carryover into Sunday, Catherine, Peter Urton. And boy, what a tough nightcap Hammer put in there to confound us. And I actually thought I had sniffed the horse out with Don't Blame Judy, the first-time starter from Cruel Jack. And that one just chased and chased and chased and couldn't get to Catherine. And then just about a minute, John, into yesterday, and you know, there were some very logical horses and some favorites that won, but there were just enough prices to make this a $212,000 payday for anybody that made it through.
Yeah, that Harrovian was the one that really spurred the big payoff there at 20-1 in that eighth race. So defeating Hackleton and the others, St. Dermot and Awe, Harrovian really, and it's an impressive. That apprentice, Heriberto Figueroa, I mean, he's kind of one to keep an eye on here because that's what impresses me. It's like when I was on HRTV and Rosie Naprobnik, I'm sitting there watching these races in Maryland. Here's this new female rider. And this Rosie Naprobnik could do two things that I look for an apprentice that might be something special. One is win on long shots. And number two, come from well off the pace, because it's one thing to ride winners when they're speed horses and you're out of trouble. But to be able to judge pace and get through traffic and so forth when you don't have the experience because you're an apprentice, that impresses me a lot. So we'll keep an eye on this guy because he did fulfill the long shot aspect of this, pulling off the 20-1 upset on Harrovian.
Well, John, looking forward to final thoughts from you when it comes to Preakness, and we'll get a feel to peruse here, and we'll check in with you and direct everybody to your final thoughts and your final approach, and as always, appreciate it.
Well, I look forward to the rest of the week with you there, right there at Baltimore, and it should be quite exciting. There's no question about it. I mean, like I say, I think we could be really looking at something special here. It's exciting. I mean, and when American Pharoah won that Belmont to break the 37-year drought, I mean, the first thing that popped into my mind, are we going to have another long drought, or are we going to be like in the 1970s when we got Secretariat to break the 25-year drought, and then just 4 years later we got the undefeated Seattle Slew to sweep the Triple Crown, and then back-to-back Triple Crowns with Affirmed and the great rivalry with Alidar. So with Justify, I mean, could we possibly be looking at a second undefeated Triple Crown winner? Well, at this point, that is certainly a distinct possibility.
John White, everybody. Post time, John, on your Twitter. And there you go. This flew by as expected. Still plenty to do tomorrow, including a visit from Dennis Drazen and much, much more. Thank Doug and Johnny and Doug, I'm losing track here. we're in trouble already. I got stuff all over the desk. Doug O'Neill, John White, Johnny D, whatever else. What else? I'm missing somebody, right? Dick Powell, yeah. Opening day at, thank you, at Prescott. Replay tomorrow, 6 to 9, here on SiriusXM. We'll talk to you at 9 o'clock. We inch closer toward Preakness. Second leg of, as John references, what could be a Triple Crown bid. We'll know everything Saturday night. Back after a little respite here, and I will talk to you tomorrow. Thanks, everybody.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
The 144th Kentucky Derby is in the books, and now it's off to Baltimore for the second leg of the Triple Crown. Will Justify dominate again as a short-priced favorite, or will a long shot up in the apple cart? See what the experts have to say in ExpressBet's free Preakness Wager Guide. That's right, the guide is free to everyone and available online at ExpressBet.com. Inside the guide, you'll find expert selections, analysis, and suggested $100 wagering strategies from some of the game's sharpest handicappers, writers, and broadcasters. Don't plunk down your hard-earned bread until you've read what these guys have to say. Also, ExpressBet's free Preakness Wager Guide provides you with important stats and trends you won't find anywhere else. Visit ExpressBet.com to access the free Preakness Wager Guide. And while you're there, open a new ExpressBet account and check out our sensational new account offers, including a $500 welcome bonus. Visit the website for complete details.
Account wagering is not permitted in all states. National Problem Gambling Support Line, 1-800-522-4700.